My name's Idan Krolowitz, and I am the founder of a website called Rip City, Not Rip Off.
And what is your job? I know you work for the Portland Civic Lab. Is that correct?
Yes. Yeah. So I have something called Portland Civic Lab, and we're trying to do deep dives on how the city works and also build solutions and tools to actually make it work better.
And so you mentioned Rip City, Not Rip Off. What was your motivation for starting that?
So I was just sitting in my desk reviewing what was happening in the state back in February, and I was reading the bill that they were proposing, and I recognized that they were basically offering $365 million without basically asking for anything in return in the first draft. And that struck me as what it was, which was basically providing a blank check to this person without getting anything in return or authorizing that money. And I thought that was not the order of operations I would have expected. I was expecting maybe we would say, how much work does this arena need? And then we looked at a project plan together, and then we can review it and then say, this is what we're willing to commit based on the project details. But it sounds like we did it completely backwards, which was, we basically asked them how much money they wanted, and they said, we want $600 million. And we said, okay, let's see how we can get you that $600 million. I just found that the whole premise of that to be not what I would expect, especially with stewards of taxpayer dollars.
Definitely. And so the website, you've said you've been talking about it as more of a textbook, and it's an ever-evolving place for information. Do you do it all alone, or do you have people that help you out with that information?
Yeah, so I have a partner, his name is Jonathan Pulvers, and he helps me with a lot of kind of operational stuff, but the crux of the research and the analysis and stuff was that was me working on that, and all the updating of the website and stuff like that, you know, I do the majority of that.
And how frequently do you update it?
Oh man, basically anytime something of note happens. So I would say recently a lot more frequently, because there's a lot of things happening. So I would say almost daily at this point, if not weekly before that.
So we are at the south entrance. There's the big Moda Center overhang right in front of the doors, and then the Blazers logo at the top, and it says Rip City runs deep. What do you like about the Moda Center?
I like that there's pretty much a good seat everywhere you are. The prices are fair now. They're not going to be soon, because prices are definitely going to go up.
Are you talking about with the renovation and the new ownership?
Oh, yeah. The new ownership. He already did this in Raleigh. He basically raised all concession prices way up. He raised ticket prices way up. So I think everyone should expect the same here. Another interesting thing about that people say is, oh, Paul Allen paid for all this. We built all these garages, the city. So they paid like $30 million at the time. All that money basically just gets reinvested back into the arena instead of going to the city.
All the money from paying for parking goes back into the arena.
Yeah.
Despite the city having paid to build it.
Correct. Yeah. And the same with the ticket fees, the 6% ticket fee that they charge. So here's another weird thing. We keep talking about this $120 million number, right? Because that's like the capital renovations. We're also committing $275 million casually to maintenance for 20 years. It's like, why aren't you in charge of the maintenance? You're the one making all the revenues from this place. Why do we keep zero revenues? I don't understand that. That's not true of any other arena in the country.
The other thing too is, why even bring up that Paul and Allen paid for it? It's already done. It's not as though Paul and Allen paid for it and now we have a debt that we have to pay back in some way.
Yeah.
It's simply that he paid for it, and there's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah.
Now we are in a completely new negotiation, and if a private business owner wants to pay for the whole arena, they should, especially if they've invested in the team and they have a lot of expectations for what that should look like.
Yeah, I agree.
Why does Tom Dundon have such a say in whether we do these renovations or not?
Because we are choosing not to ask anyone else to bid and compete against them. We are making a collective decision to say we are only going to bid this out to Tom Dundon, and that's it. So if you're going to renovate something in your house and you're only getting a quote from one guy, he doesn't really have an incentive to give you the lowest price.
Yeah.
He's going to just give you the high price because he knows you're not going anywhere else.
Who are some other options if we were to open up to other people?
There's tons of arena operators that run arenas. In Seattle, in Climate Pledge, it's a city-owned arena. They just renovated it for $1.2 billion. The public paid nothing. Why do they pay nothing? Because they put it out to a competitive bid.
Yeah.
And all the arena operators had to bid against each other. And the best bid was, we will cover all of this if you give us a 39-year lease. And we will cover the cost of the entire building, and we'll cover maintenance and other things. And the public didn't have to pay a single dime. So same situation we're in, city-owned arena, private company operating it. They keep all the revenues. They pay for the arena renovation. It sounds like it makes sense. You keep all the money, so you make the renovations. It should be that simple.
So there's more, there's multiple things that both the state and the city are essentially giving away.
Oh, yeah.
In this situation with the Moda Center, they're giving away that blank check.
Yep.
Without the project plans.
Correct.
And they're also giving away essentially the power of negotiating for the renovations to Tom Dundon.
Correct. For the arena operation. So the arena operation contract is another one. Development rights around the land is another one they're giving away. We'll see. We'll see what the negotiation produces, but that's another one. Everything, right? If you think about air rights or like anything that has to do with this arena, all of that belongs to the city right now. The land underneath the arena, all of that belonged to the city even when Paul Allen built the arena, right? So we've been giving, the city has been giving away a lot. And I think some people in the city and county are just like, no one wants to build here because our city sucks. And that's the kind of their stance. And my rebuttal,
it's pretty defeatist.
Yeah, it's pretty defeatist. And my rebuttal to that is, did you even ask?
Yeah.
Have you put it out to a bid to find out if anyone would be interested in building? And the answer seems to be no. And we don't want to do it because we don't want to risk Tom Dundon taking our team, which I get.
Yeah.
But it still means you should do your diligence. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Even if you end up giving it to him, then at least know what the alternative could have been. But obviously the people who are working on this are not incentivized to do that because then it makes them look bad.
Yeah.
They're like, oh, we could have gotten hundreds of millions of dollars from this other thing, but we decided to go with Tom, who gave us nothing. That doesn't make the people working the deal look terrific. And so they have no incentive to actually do this competitive bid because it just might make them look bad. So all of this is, a lot of the story, to wax poetic on this, but a lot of the story is really just like all of the obvious incentives are aligning in a way that helps everybody except for the public. The senators have their incentives, the mayor has his incentive, the county chair has her incentive, and everyone has their incentives, and all of those align perfectly to give him all this money, because in a couple years everyone will forget that this happened, and the only people who will be stuck with the bill are the taxpayers. So that sucks.
And year after year, it will be the slow scrape of people's income, everyday people's income,
right,
to fund the renovation.
And it just adds to that tax liability that all of these fiscally responsible people keep saying we have too many of. But when it's doing things like this, I guess everything changes.
And just to be super, super clear for everyone listening, every time the city is mentioned, that's you. Because you're the one who is paying taxes into the city. Everything the city pays for is coming from your investments. So don't forget, the city is you. The money that the city is spending is coming out of your taxes. So when the city gets...
three, yeah.
Yeah.
City, county, and state.
City, county, and...
three times.
Yes. So when we talk about getting money back from what the city invests, that's money that we should be getting back, whether that's into education, into having access to healthcare, or drivable roads. When money goes back to the city, that money goes back into our infrastructure that helps us live better lives. And if the money is not going back into the city, Edon, where is it going?
Back into the arena. Everything flows back into the arena or to Tom Dundon. It's basically two places the money goes, into Tom's pocket or back into the arena. And again, the more you invest back into the arena, it further pads the revenues and profits that he's going to make. It's like it's a virtuous cycle for him and a vicious cycle for us.
So we're standing at the Moda Center right now. It is a massive building, and it's in the Albina area. So it has lots of partnerships with Albina organizations, and that was actually brought up in the recent council meeting, which it sounds like negotiations between the Albina Vision Trust and the Moda Center seem to be at least, if not tense, then not very present right now. Do you have any insight onto what that looks like?
I think the thing I was looking for and didn't find in the term sheet or anything else is what is actually promised to Albania, what has been written down and actually committed to them. Right now, it seems like nothing. It's like a handshake promise or even less than that. So I would like to see something actually written in stone to say, hey, Albania can get development rights. It seems like Singleton in the county is pushing for that in her amendments. It seems like people have been talking about it, but certainly I would not trust anything that someone says without writing it down with regards to this kind of thing, especially because land development rights in a city like Portland are unbelievably lucrative, and anyone who tells you otherwise is lying or worse. So it's a really, think of how prime this location is,
yeah, right,
as it goes for cities. So the fact that these development rights haven't been written in stone, maybe that's part of the negotiation, I don't know, but I definitely would like to see something more concrete for Albania.
Can you just take us around this building? When was the last time you were here?
Oh man, it might have been, I think it came a year ago for a game randomly, but it's been a little while since I just recently moved back. But I've been here like 30, 40 times. Like I've been here quite a lot.
Yeah.
So this north entrance, I think this is where they basically want to do a whole redevelopment, I believe, of this whole north entrance and turn it into a concourse. I don't know what that concourse will include. I imagine maybe there'll be more bars or more kind of amenities and stuff. But could this look way better? Yeah.
Of course. Yeah.
For sure. Even in this area here, it seems like there's an athletic facility, orthopedics and neurosurgery here. And then there's Dr. Jack's, which is the one bar in the back. But there really isn't much here.
Yeah.
So the potential, I think, exists. But it's for revenue generating reasons, right? It's like they want people to come here. They want to drink and eat before the games, to hang out.
Yeah, I don't think anyone's contesting whether the renovations need to be made or not. Renovations need to be made.
Yeah.
It's about who's going to pay for it.
Yeah, like if we're generating revenue, if the city puts in $120 million or $400 million, which is more appropriate based on how much they're paying in other fees, do they get part of that revenue back? Does the city get money back? Do all these extra drinks and food that are consumed, does the city get anything for their investment and their part in making that happen? Right now the answer is no.
Yeah.
And presumably the answer will continue to be no, unless someone demands that that is not the case.
All right. So I think more stuff that we haven't covered is more of the numerical side, to keep getting into that.
Sure.
So based on what you've already done, since you're very enthralled in this process right now, what do you think is the most important numbers that the public needs to know about?
Well, I think they need to know what the actual all-up number is going to look like. So the numbers keep growing or being hidden. So the city's contribution is $120 million in capital contributions. That's up front. That's the number everyone's saying. But somehow everyone keeps avoiding the $275 million number, which is a much larger number, which comes from the parking, which the city built, and ticket fees, which fans pay. And so all of that money is also going back into the arena. So that's the city contribution. The county contribution started at $88 million. Now it's up to $138 million when you include interest. So that number has been growing and growing. And then the state's number is obviously $365 million. But with interest, that could be as high as $630 million at the end of 20 years. The midpoint of that would be around $580 million. So if you add up $580 plus $400 plus $130, that's a big number. It's over $1 billion. It's around $1.2 billion. And so that's the actual public investment that the public is making. Again, if you're a Portland citizen, you're paying that times three, because you're paying city, county, and state. And that obligation lasts. And depending on how strong the protections that we get, if the protections that we get are not strong, we could be back here doing this dance again in 10 years. Because Tom Dundon might say, yeah, you built me that then, but times have changed and the NBA has changed. And what is a first-class arena now is completely different. I don't think it's all money. I think the protections are important to make sure, again, we don't have to do this again. But I also think it's important that people understand that this is a billion-plus dollar investment. And currently the return on that investment is negligible. If we do get the $100 million that is in the draft term sheet, if we do eventually secure that, again, that would be a 9%. I won't call it a return, because a return presumes that you get all your money back plus something on top. We're not getting any of that back. We're going to get 9% of the total outlay that we put in. So we're going to recoup 9% of the project costs, which isn't much, right? And so at the end of the day, net net of all of these numbers, what we're talking about is we're going to hand over Tom Dundon about $1 billion subsidy. That's the true answer, right? When you net out what we get back, that's what it is. It's $1 billion subsidy.
And talking about taxes and what the public can expect, what do you think those taxes are going to look like in the coming years?
It's hard to say what it looks like on a per person basis because everyone pays different levels of taxes. But what we do know for sure is that, again, if you're a Portland citizen, you're paying the city's part of that, you're paying the county's part of that, and you're paying the state's. Now, again, the state makes a case that the income taxes from the players is paying for a significant amount of that. That's true. But then it begs another question, which is, should NBA players not have to pay taxes? And should doctors not have to pay taxes, or lawyers, because they're also critical for our system? Yeah, I don't really like the concept of what the state says is like, there's no new taxes. That's not exactly true. All of that money we've been receiving, we've had an income tax for a long time. So all the money we've been receiving that used to flow into the general fund to pay for all these things that we need is now being redirected back into this arena, right? So all the money, basically the one thing you can remember is any money that's produced here is going back into the arena or into Tom Dundon's pocket. That's basically it. It's going into one of those two places. And if it goes into the arena, by extension, it's eventually going to, the fruits of that are going to end up back in Tom Dundon's pocket. So that's the thing that I find the most troubling, is we're giving a $1 billion subsidy and our expectation of return is basically nothing. It's negative $1 billion. And that's our return.
With spending all this time and investment, you're emotionally connected to the Blazers in a really real way. This is your team.
Yeah.
Sitting in front of the Moda Center, looking at these doors, thinking about this place being renovated, how do you feel? Are you excited that there's potential renovations?
I am. I think renovations will be great. I think I've said this before, the top line number isn't the thing that I'm stuck on, right? It's not the fact that it's 600 million or a billion or 2 billion or whatever it is, right? That's not the thing I'm stuck on. I think the city should make investments in arenas or in other things that it owns. But the problem is, it's just, we're not getting anything back, right? We can't even pay off this investment. And we're not saying we're going to give $1 billion for civic identity. I think that's I'm not saying you can't really put a price on civic identity, but you kind of have to in these circumstances, right? At a certain point, you have to have a number where you say, no, this is too much. We're already getting extorted. we have to say this is enough. And so it's bittersweet because I'm really excited about the idea that we can have more things going on here before and after the games, and fans can hang out more, and there's actually things to do. If that's what actually happens, we don't know because we don't have the project plans. But I also am disgusted, honestly, about the fact that we're being extorted. It's the mix of those two feelings, which is a lot to grapple with.
The public should definitely, to some extent, invest in an arena that keeps pace with the quality of arenas necessitated for sports that everyone enjoys, but not in excess.
Correct.
Not where it is making money simply for the owner and not for the public. And then, in addition to that, any money that is publicly invested needs to have public returns. You brought up the civic identity as a good that we're essentially investing in. How does investment in civic identity hold up against investment in, for example, public safety and civic health and education?
I think it's hard to quantify those two things. One is a purely qualitative thing. You can't really measure civic identity. It's more of just a feeling, whereas some of those other things can be measured, however poorly they can still be measured. So to me, they're two different categories of things, for sure. It's kind of apples and oranges.
If the city goes through with handing Tom Dundon everything that he's asking for, would that dissuade you from coming to a game?
I don't think it would dissuade me from coming to a game, because I think I still have kept the... I remain that the Blazers are not leaving under any of these circumstances, and I think the state already committed enough money that Tom Dundon should be happy, and he shouldn't be asking anyone else for any more money. But yeah, I don't think I'll be dissuaded from coming, but I definitely will be purchasing less concessions and doing anything that I can to give Tom Dundon less of my money. That's without a doubt, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a feeling... There's an additional feeling that comes on to what you already get to experience from this arena, right? It layers, really.
Yeah, it does. And I think, and I'm hoping that the level of hate to Tom Dundon that has been happening does not translate into people's feelings about this team, right? But I feel it's starting to get to the point of where a lot of people are saying, this is too much. This is going to last. This is a little more permanent than just like a six-month negotiation.
We're sitting right underneath the Moda Center, but you can see the sky above us is full of smoke right now. As a city, we have a lot that we're working on right now. And one of those things is the Moda Center. But we're doing it in a climate where that we also have to deal with air pollution and forest fires and just yesterday collapsing buildings by NATO Parkway. Do you think it's worth comparing the negotiations that are happening around the Moda Center and the huge investment that the state, the county, and the city is making against other types of investments that we may not be making in those other areas?
I think it's always worth having the opportunity cost and analyzing what we're not investing in by investing in things like this. And again, it's not binary. It's not, do we invest all or nothing, right? Do we put in $1 billion or not? I think the conversation that's a better conversation is how much do we actually need to pay to keep this thing running in tip-top shape versus how much are we actually paying just to pad the pockets of this owner, right? And so the real question is, all the revenue-generating upgrades that we don't have to pay for, how much money are we paying in that? It's going to be upwards of hundreds of millions of dollars, I think, at the end of the day. We're going to be subsidizing his revenue-generating upgrades. And so the question is, how much, if we took those $300, $400, or $500 million and put them elsewhere instead of putting it into Tom Dundon's pockets, I think that's the right level of kind of scope with which to compare these two things. And I don't know a single person in Portland who would say, yeah, we should put $500 million in Tom Dundon's pockets instead of doing it literally anything else with that money. I think whatever your pet project is, that money would go better there than it would to Tom Dundon.
Seeing where the conversation is post the work session where the Blazers representatives came and what the media landscape has looked like around this, in Council President Dunphy's opening remarks, he stated that the media's coverage of this was very dramatic. Do you think that is an overstatement, or do you think that, like, there is something that's missing the mark with what has already been said about this? Or do you feel like there's something to be said for how much momentum this has gained?
I think it is fair to say that there have been certain publications who have been very dramatic, in particular about the relocation threat and how much that exists. I view that very much as a posture. I can't imagine anyone who gets 65% of the funding that they're looking for would be considering leaving that deal on the table and going somewhere else. So I think there are certain news sources that I think have been stoking the fire in the wrong way and stoking the fears of the people who live in Portland, and that I'm unhappy about. But I do also think that, look at what this produced. The state's framework basically was a blank check. And all of the stuff that happened since has been slowly, incrementally getting us something, right? That $100 million that we asked for in the draft term sheet would not have existed, I believe, had the public not had an uproar about it and said, this is crazy. What are we doing here? So I think without the public doing what it's doing and saying, hey, we're looking at this, we're educating ourselves on this, and we want to make sure we hold our electeds accountable to the results and to the outcomes, I think without that happening, we would be in a much worse situation than we would have been had we just rubber stamped the state's framework and just kept going with that. Now, we're about to enter a world where we're going back into the darkness and the public is going to be not privy to these negotiations, which is perhaps necessary to do a negotiation, but also concerns me for all the same reason that I was concerned back in February.
Yeah. Can you go into that a little bit more? Why are we going to be in the dark?
I haven't gotten details from anyone telling me otherwise. And so if that happens, this may change. But from what I understand, after August 12th, the joint authority forms, which is the city and the state, and their negotiation teams are going to have formal, in quotes, negotiations, but really it's going to be negotiating the structure of what's in that draft term sheet, right? And if that draft term sheet is very weak, then the negotiations aren't going to have a lot of power, right? They're basically negotiating around a very weak framework. And so depending on what actually gets presented August 12th, we'll know whether these negotiations are going to produce something much more meaningful, or whether it's, or whether not. Now, yeah, and I don't see anything yet in the draft term sheet or otherwise saying how the public is going to be kept updated on the status of negotiations. Are they giving us monthly updates? Are they going to provide us with ideas of which clauses the Blazers have accepted and which they have not accepted? Are they going to tell the city councilors well in advance what they even have to vote on before they have to vote on it? Or are they just going to rush it and give it to them a week before or something and say, you got to approve this, and you don't really have time to understand what it's even about? If I was a betting man, I would say, based on the way this process has been run so far, we've been sprinting towards the deadline without trying to minimize scrutiny. And that's what I'm afraid is going to happen between now and December, is that all of this is going to happen behind closed doors, and the city councilors aren't going to know what the deal is until December 17th, or when they have to vote. In which case, they're not really considering anything, right? They're being asked to rubber stamp it. And again, I can't imagine that will produce the best outcome for the public.
You outline this super well in your website, Rip City, Not Rip Off. There are quite a few pages on that website. There's one page people should go to get the information that they need, say if they were to testify at council on Wednesday. What should they look at?
Oh man, it's like a textbook at this point, so it's a little hard to go back to one page. But I think what's maybe most relevant now is probably there's like a deal now page where you can look at what the deal looks like today, or you can look at if you want to go in deep and you're more of a technical analytical person, the terms page is probably the one that lays out, again, if you're asking me what are all the things that you would love to see in a term sheet, that would be on the terms page, so /terms, ripcitynotripoffs.com/terms. That's what I would invite people to. Or even if you want to take that page and stick it into your LLM of choice and ask questions against it or whatever, I think that you could do that depending on how you feel about all those things. But yeah, I think that's probably the best pages. But again, the homepage kind of tells the main story, which is Tom Dundon said he wants to do a market deal. I think the public should hold him to that. And we defined what a market deal is based on looking at the market and seeing what other people have paid. So I think holding that line is what I would tell people to tell their council members and other folks, is we can put a fair deal on the table. The question is whether Tom Dundon's going to accept it. But that's not, we don't have any authority to decide that, right? All we can do is put a fair deal on the table, and that's the job of the city council, in my opinion.
What is the number one ask on behalf of the public for what we should be getting back if we are investing in this arena?
I think my principle has always been pretty simple, which is the public should pay for what the public gets, and the private company should pay for what they get, right? And so if they want to build a whole bunch of revenue-generating upgrades, which it seems, according to Dwayne Hankins' report in the council session and what he said, it sounds like this entire thing is revenue-generating upgrades, because they said that the arena is already in first-class condition. So if it's in first-class condition, by definition, everything is maybe not superfluous, but maybe not so far from that, revenue generating upgrades. So that my principle is just, if we need to pay for a new roof, if we need to pay for foundations, if we need to pay for things that are even shared modernization type of things, I think that's an acceptable ask of the public, assuming they get a return back that can help them pay for it. Anything outside of that's purely just padding Tom Dundon's pockets should be paid by him, because he's going to be the recipient of all that revenue.
Thank you, Adan. Hey all, this is Julia Moore with some City Council updates. On Wednesday, August 5th, I went to City Hall to do my usual reporting. I arrived during a 10-minute break after the first topic of the agenda. The second agenda item was the Moda Center. I was right on time. I am accustomed to visiting City Hall. The typical bustle, the security process, and the smell of public furniture, which is why on Wednesday, after coming through City Hall's front doors, I immediately took note of the sounds I could hear coming from upstairs. I said hello to the guards. I opened my bag so they could see the only threatening device was my recording equipment, which, unfortunately, is not on their list to confiscate. They are still entitled to do a thorough search for good measure, which they did, and as they rummaged through my bag, I took in the clamoring of heels, the cacophony of well-placed laughs, and the overall feeling of a well-organized team on their way to victory. It was a sound familiar to me, though I only hear it about once a year. I have another job, working in Major League Baseball, and I attend winter meetings once a year. Yes, the winter meetings, for the baseball fans out there. I have a very specific job in baseball, and it does not include being impressed with RBIs and pitching speeds. What it does involve is paying meticulous attention, planning, and executing the small victories that never get celebrated so the big visible victory can be achieved. You're welcome. Anyway, I am very familiar with the sound of dazzling, well-orchestrated persuasion, especially inside of professional sports. What I wasn't prepared for was the wall of expensive perfume. I didn't flinch, but I did exhale as fast as possible. Security was impeccable on Wednesday the 5th. They seemed to have either given each personnel a haircut or selected only the freshest cuts to be on duty that day. As usual, I began my gentle milling and note-taking and noticed Vice President Olivia Clark chatting merrily with We Are Rip City. These are the AstroTurf leaders. And Mayor Wilson being talked up by a tall, bald man in an expensive suit whom I suspect was a strong contributor to the expensive smell. The vibe, I'm telling you guys, was fantastic. Blazers gear was littered about on chairs and benches for people to grab for free, and there wasn't an opposing view in sight. The bell rang, like the period at the end of a sentence, and all of us made our way swiftly into the hall. By 11 a.m., council proceedings began with Councillor Pertle-Guinea, pointing out that, in typical negotiations, one party brings forward their first offer and the other party comes with their first offer, and then, as she says, you work closer together. But that, and I quote, from what they've heard, this is going to be a more fluid process than that, end quote. She asks if this is the case. Council President Jamie Dunphy looks down and confirms that what she said is the case and says yes while lifting himself out of his chair with his hands to readjust an obvious discomfort. He then proceeds to invite a panel of invited testimony that includes Mike Thielen from We Are Rip City Coalition, Victoria Laura, co-chair, We Are Rip City, Kara Strodenmeyer Phillips, We Are Rip City, VP of Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion at Moda Center Health, Claire Hamill, president of the Portland Fire, Kathy Keithley, president of Gresham City Council, Yasmin Ibarra, political director of SEIU Local 49, Wendy Johannes, executive director of the Albina Vision Trust, and seven more political and business leaders. There are two coalitions active on the Blazers and City Moda Center deal. One is We Are Rip City, and the other is Rip City Not Rip Off. Both coalitions want a renovation of the Moda Center. The primary debate is who will pay for it. We Are Rip City positions itself as a grassroots coalition of organizers. However, this turf is fake grass. There's no roots. For context, AstroTurf team We Are Rip City hired March Strategies as their marketing and strategy consultant. March Strategies only just recently wrapped up a consulting project for the Blazers. Leading members of We Are Rip City are also business leaders with huge ties to big companies. For contrast, Eden Krolowitz of Rip City Not Rip Off is a Blazers fan and has no professional history in sports. His opposition was the well-oiled machine that is the Portland Trail Blazers. Sport teams don't just drill their athletes, they drill their staff too. Opening the agenda item, Council President Dunphy fumbled out, and I quote, we have a number of panels invited to give testimony, end quote. My question sitting there was, so is this a panel or is it testimony? I've been to council for 20 months and I've seen plenty of panels. A panel typically includes subject matter experts being interviewed by city council on their expertise or they give a presentation on their topic area. Testimony is where people come to share their opinion on how the council should vote on a specific agenda item. The invited list of political and business leaders gave no presentation, and they were not questioned by the council. What they shared fell squarely into the category of public testimony, with a special slot at the front of the line. Inviting We Are Rip City and their supporting business and political leaders to the front of testimony line was like making the first half of a basketball game a free throw contest for a team of 6-foot athletes against a team of players who could barely reach the rim. Their testimony would go on to frame every public testimony after them. These testimonies were filled with rhetoric provided by Blazers and We Are Rip City, talking points that have little to no evidence behind them, such as, and this is a quote from the We Are Rip City website, that it is an economic engine, the Moda Center, for the Rose Quarter in the Central City, unquote. Independent sports economist J.C. Bradbury noted in an information session with city councilors that data shows that money being spent at the Moda Center is simply money that would otherwise be spent in other parts of the city. And this is true of other cities in relation to their sports arenas. So what are the Blazers doing? They're playing ball. This is Blazers admin's game. Their athletes play 82 games in a season, but the admin are just as competitive, and they don't get a good competitive operations opportunity for 15 or 20 years. 20 years to practice and network and perfect their city hall layup. Their owner is their coach, and the fans are watching. So I understood when a woman sitting next to me was doing stealthy fist pumps every time there was public testimony in favor of the publicly funded renovation. In her tailored suit and her Blazers pin, her eyes and ears clinging to every word of public testimony, she was calculating the score in real time, watching her careful planning and practice play out. And together, we kept score. With a lead of 12 invited testimonies at the start of the council meeting, the Blazers had a head start to zero. Each of the 12 testifiers gave some variation of the same pitch. Mike Thielen from We Are Rip City Coalition said, "Don't lose what we have. The city needs to invest in the Moda Center." Kara Stroudmeyer Phillips from We Are Rip City said, "The Blazers are essential to the culture of Portland. The Blazers bring economic vitality to the city." Kathy Keithley, president of the Gresham City Council, said Rip City isn't just a slogan, it's our identity. The Moda Center must be reinvented for all of us, end quote. Then Adriana Locke took the mic. She said, "Oregon is bracing for $421 million in cuts to Medicaid next year. So when I heard that the state legislature approved $365 million to renovate the Moda Center, I felt deeply betrayed. At a time when so many of us are having to tighten our belts, investing so much public money requires careful scrutiny that I did not see." She directly contradicted the economic claims from earlier testimony. She said, and I quote, "My small business is within walking distance of the Moda Center, but we don't benefit from its business like the center itself," end quote. She also said how many public services the Moda Center already uses, from the state healthcare many of its employees are on, to the TriMet services that get employees and fans to games and concerts at the Moda Center. In total, 52 of the testimonies given were in favor of the public funding of the Moda Center renovation. This, up against 20 testimonies that questioned the method of funding the renovation. Adriana closed her testimony by saying, and I quote, "The Blazers are a beloved Oregon tradition. But gone are the days of Paul Allen investing millions of his own money in the places and teams that he loved. It's a shame that the new owners don't share his community-minded values, love of the team, or respect for the thousands of jobs that hang in the balance. But that's why we elected you, the councilors, to be good stewards of our city. We need you to play a different game and find a way forward to create good jobs without risking state and local public funds," end quote. When I walked into city council that day, what I heard was the sound of public officials playing the Blazers administration's game. Adriana Locke reminded the room that it wasn't theirs to play.